Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for February the 26th, 2021. This is episode number 47. Our top stories today, Hyundai IONIQ 5 makes its grand debut. Lucid goes public, postpones production of the Air. Hyundai Kona Electric gets a total recall. I'm Dominic Chioni, Inside EVs forum moderator and the Inside EVs editor. Joining us today is Tom Malogny, Inside EVs editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge with Tom Malogny. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. As you can see, if you're watching this on YouTube, we have a special guest this week, Sean Mitchell from All Things EV YouTube channel. Welcome, hey, welcome back. Welcome
back, Sean. Thanks for having me. I'm just getting set up. Plug it in the microphone.
No problem. Great to see you again. If you like the podcast, please leave us a rating or maybe even a review on whichever platform you catch us on. That helps others discover us and spread the word about EVs. Of course, if you're watching on YouTube, we'd love a thumbs up there as well. Okay, so gentlemen of the panel, welcome. And ladies and gentlemen of the audience, welcome to the Inside EVs podcast. So let's kick it off by talking about what's charging in our driveways this week. Actually, I'm not sure if we have anything in our driveways this week, but Sean, have you driven anything new recently?
Yeah, I had the Mustang Mach-E about a week ago.
Okay,
that was fun. That was like a four day event, and took it up to the mountains, took it around, did some filming. I'm actually quite excited about this one. I think they knocked it out of the park in many ways. There are some areas of improvement, in my opinion, but you got to start somewhere, and I think that this is a far better start than Nissan's Leaf or Chevy's Bolt, in my opinion.
Do you want to elaborate on just a little bit, like your experience? What was it that you didn't like about it? Because I actually just drove it a couple days ago, but just like briefly, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But I was just wondering, because I didn't have enough time to find anything to be critical about, but I wasn't doing like range or anything.
Yeah, I can talk about a few things. This is like a sneak peek. I've done this on a few occasions when I've been a guest. I haven't put out the video yet. I finished recording the script a few days ago. I sent it to my videographer. We're gonna do like a little cinematic movie. We took the car into the mountains and got some just beautiful backdrop of snow and mountains and pine trees, and so I'm really excited about that. I kind of tie it into my fascination with Mustangs as early as a high school student. And I begged my parents to buy me a Mustang 5.0. And they didn't listen. They bought me a granny car. But I still loved and enjoyed Mustangs as a kid. And that's carried through to my adult years. And so there's this sort of adolescent tie to this whole experience of getting behind the wheel of a Mustang. And, one thing that I think really shines through is Ford's resume with building vehicles. It just felt solid. It was a solid built car. There were no rattles. There were no shakes. There were no odd things like that that sometimes you find in newer automakers. And so that was one of the things that I really enjoyed about it, is that you got in the car and it felt like a real car that was built well. Now, you can take into the fact that this is a pre-production prototype or early production vehicle, but build quality was solid. I liked how it felt driving around. It was spacious. There was plenty of headroom, plenty of knee room in the second row. And the drive was solid. The suspension, I was really, really impressed with. It didn't feel like a heavy car. So whatever they're doing there with their coil suspension, I think is fantastic. It just didn't feel like a heavy vehicle when you go over bumps. They gave me a standard range Mach-E, and it was just a little bit underwhelming. I wish they would have given me extended range, and I'm surprised that they didn't. I'm surprised they don't just give every person reviewing a vehicle the extended range. So, at 210 miles on a full charge, it left me lacking a little bit more. So that was one area that I think that for $50,000, a 210 mile vehicle just doesn't cut it. So I think the 300 miles should be the standard for every electric vehicle that's going out on the market, and especially for that price point. So those are a few of my favorite features and least favorite features.
Right on. Cool. And so, yeah, look out for All Things EV, Sean Mitchell YouTube channel, for that video when it comes out, because, that'll be definitely good. I love your videos. So, Tom, I know you've driven the Chevy Bolt EUV and EV this week, and Kyle, our other regular co-host, is out driving them today, actually. But I believe you can't really tell us much about them yet. Can you say anything about them at all? Like how they looked in person, or how the seats, if the seats are more comfortable than, as, or as comfortable as we've been told, or?
Yeah. I can't talk about driving impressions. Okay. And to be clear, I didn't drive the Bolt EV. This was an EUV, media drive. They actually had a couple Bolt EVs there, but we were not allowed to drive them because they were like a different classification. They were a different type of build, and only employees were allowed to drive them. They weren't like certified to let media drive. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't even, one of the people asked and we said, no, sorry, you can't. They used them as like the chase vehicles. We drove in a formation. This was a very organized and short drive where we couldn't vary. Usually they give you the keys. They say, here's the route, but you can vary from it and take pictures. This was different. We were in formation. We couldn't leave the group, and it was really strict and short. But the driving impressions were embargoed till Monday, so pretty quickly we'll be able to have some news out about that. But the vehicle, as far as I was concerned, the EUV, both of the new Bolt refresh, I think they did a nice job on it. I think the front looks really clean. I really like the nose on the Bolt now. Yeah. The interior is all new. Huge upgrade on the interior. Right. I never liked the Bolt EV's interior. I always thought it looked cheap. And I kind of thought that Chevy went out of their way to try to make this futuristic looking angular dashboard, that this is an EV. And now they kind of said, oh, well, it doesn't have to look crazy to be an EV. Let's just make it look like a nice Chevrolet. So in that regard, I like what they did. The seats are completely redesigned. And I will say that they're better, but I'll stop at saying that. The rest you'll hear in our review on Monday. But the EUV, I thought it looked more muscular. That's the play, if you ask me. It's only $2,000 more than the Bolt EV, and it's got much more rear legroom. And it just seems like it has more versatility, that vehicle. I like pretty much everything on it. The two negatives that I'll say is that they didn't improve the DC fast charge. It's stuck in 2014 with 55 kilowatt DC fast charge, and the EUV should have been available in all-wheel drive. If they would have made that vehicle all-wheel drive as an option, I think it would have done that much better. But that said, I wouldn't discourage anybody from buying this vehicle. I think it's a good deal. It starts at only $33,995. That's really affordable. I like what Chevy did, but the one thing I will say is they didn't do anything to really move the needle forward. They made a better Bolt, but nothing's groundbreaking here.
Right.
Does it surprise you at all that they kept the EV instead of just doing away and focusing more on the EUV? Because the EUV just looks, the offering just looks more compelling to me.
Yeah, absolutely, Sean. And that was my initial reaction. But then somebody mentioned to me, somebody threw out, well, maybe they're keeping it for like fleet sales. And I was like, yeah. Like I could see the Bolt EV being sold in mass for like, municipal use and fleets, where they don't need the extra space. They don't need, the EUV vehicle, it's the least expensive form, that's extremely efficient and gets, great low running costs. So I think they kept it for that. But that's the only reason I come up with, because they're so close. I know that picture makes them look like there's a big size difference, but there is not.
Right.
It's 6 inches longer, but the height is the same. The width is the same. The interior is exactly the same. When you sit in the car, you can't tell which car you're in. The only difference interior is you've got 3 more inches of rear legroom, but that makes a big difference for families hauling kids around and just putting people in the back seat.
Well, that's really the head scratcher to me. They're so similar, and yeah, especially in price. So it's almost like $2,000 difference, and you've got nominal difference in terms of size. I think I heard that the trunk space in the EV is larger than the EUV, and that was another head scratcher for me too.
So I need to clear that up. I talked to the GM engineers about this, and yeah, I brought this up on last week's podcast. So the technical specifications show that the EUV's cargo space is slightly less. John is saying, what's an EUV? I know, ridiculous. As if we needed another acronym, John.
Utility vehicle, maybe?
Yeah, electric utility vehicle. You know, sport utility vehicle isn't good enough. We need another acronym. So I spoke with GM's engineers about this and said, like, you're defying physics. It's 6 inches longer. How can the cargo space be less? You know, it just doesn't make sense. I could almost see if the cargo space behind the rear seats was less because maybe they pushed the rear seating back. But then once you put the seats down, it can't be less, you know? So he said, actually, it isn't less.
Okay.
Okay, but the spec sheet shows it's slightly less. So he explained to me, okay, there's 10 different ways to measure cargo space. The way they have to announce it present it is by the SAE's specifications. And the way that SAE determines how you measure the rear cargo space is you have to measure the height of the roof in the cargo area exactly above the axle. Okay. Now take a look at how the Bolt EUV's roof line tails down and how far back that rear wheel is. So when you measure directly up from the rear axle, you've already at a point where the roof has sloped down a couple of inches. So that's the height you get. So the measurement comes out slightly less than the bolt because you see the rear of the bolt doesn't have an aggressive taper down as much. The roof line stays more consistent. It's like an inch or two higher directly over the axle. But the GM engineers told me if you actually measure this, if you put like cargo in it and pack it up to the roof, it's actually maybe 10% more cargo space than the Bolt EV. So we've got to get that out there.
Yeah.
I know so many people are commenting on it. But the fact of the matter is it's all about how the SAE determines how the measurement happens.
I believe there's another couple specifications where the EUV is smaller too. I don't know if I can't want to say hip room or shoulder room or something, one of those kind of metrics.
Yeah.
I think Kyle was talking about that last night in our company chat.
I think it's all how you measure because the vehicles are the same, except right. The EUV is 6 inches longer.
Well, that's great. Mystery solved then. I was looking at a bunch of volume numbers last night too. And it's funny where discrepancies were like one vehicle is like bigger, but then it has like less room than other. We'll talk about that a little bit later. I actually drove something different this week. I drove my little Chevy Spark EV to the Ford dealership here in Tallahassee and tried out the Mustang Mach-E myself. They only had one on the lot now. They've sold all the other ones they had allocated already. This one, they can't sell until they've got 4,000 miles on it or they've had it for 4 months. And I believe that's something that goes for like all the dealerships in the country. For sure out in Colorado where you are, Kyle, somebody out there mentioned that to me. So while I'm thinking about it, I would encourage all y'all to call up your local Ford dealer and arrange a test drive. They really want to get miles on these things so they can sell them. And I didn't get like the hard sell either. They didn't even take my phone number or anything. So I'm not even going to get, sometimes, car salesmen are very persistent and we're good at their jobs and they'll follow up repeatedly if you go for a test drive. But, this was a really great experience. There was like no hard sell and, he was really kind of happy to, take people out on the road. And he said that there had been quite a bit of interest as well. But they're having a hard time getting them in actually to actually sell. Like they have like this one now and they don't know when to get the next ones. So, but it was a pretty great experience. I pulled up and it was sitting right up on the front by the road. It was a standard size battery, like what you had, Sean. They did have a bigger one there, I believe, as well. And and it was rear-wheel drive only as well. So it had 395 miles on it total and had a 95% charge. So that was great because, you know, sometimes dealerships in the past have fallen down. They'll leave a car like with hardly any charge on the lot, but this was not the case. And this was like right around 5 o'clock or just after 5 o'clock too. So later in the day. I want to say it had 253 miles of indicated range on the dash at 95%, but I should have taken a picture. I was kind of giddy and just like looking over everything. But in any case, it felt really nice inside. There was like soft touch materials everywhere. Like Sean was saying, there's plenty of room in the front seat. I tried the back seat and there's had the glass roof. It was great. There's lots of head space both ways and lots of room, even though I was had been in the front in the driver's seat. So I had the seat back. I'm like 6'2", I think. And so it was comfortably back and I got in the back seat. Had moved the seat and there's like plenty of a lot of room. Actually, it was very spacious. I was kind of impressed. And then on the side as well, there was it looked like there'd be plenty of room for three people very comfortably. So taking off was a little odd for me at first. It almost felt like the parking brake was stuck on, but it was just set to one pedal driving. It seemed stronger than on my Spark EV in max regen. We didn't go that far, and all the streets were in good shape, so I didn't have a chance to really judge the suspension. But now that hearing Sean mention that it didn't feel heavy, it's true. It didn't really feel like it felt like better than the Bolt EV. I'm not sure if that's that's a low bar maybe, but for the Mustang, but it did feel feel great. It didn't feel like it was too much car for the suspension. And I did give it the beans a few times, and it felt really good. Didn't have like gut punch acceleration, but it's only the rear wheel drive. I believe it has a 5.2 second 0-60, and there's an annoying torque steer you get with front wheel drive as well. But this felt, it just felt good, like Mustang. It's like I drove a Mustang a couple summers ago on a long road trip, and it had more power than that actually, because that was a V6 in that. And that felt great, but this, I like the quiet power of an electric vehicle. It doesn't, you're not broadcasting. It just does it, And this actually, I did find it did have a bit of a sound, the motor sound. Did you hear it? Yeah, I kind of liked it. It was nice, right?
I actually turned it off. I've never been a fan of the generic sound, the engine sound that they add to it. I think they do the same thing with the Taycan as well, right. and the Audi e-tron. And it just, I don't know, it feels synthetic, and I love the sound of silence. So I turned that feature off as soon as I found it.
Right. The I-Pace has it as well. But I asked the guy if it was an artificial sound, and he said no. But I didn't see the setting on the. We went through some of the settings on the screen, and I like the screen, by the way. It was worked fine, responsive, like you'd expect. That kind of thing has come so far in the last years. Automotive like screens, they used to be so terrible, but this is pretty nice. Even the button on the bottom was fine. It was like, oh, okay, it's kind of. I don't know. People always complain about the knobs, right? There's no knobs. So they gave you a knob. And it's kind of maybe some people might see it as gimmicky, but it's kind of, easy to grab. And I liked it better than like tapping on the screen for volume control, say.
Yeah, I found the dial there on the touchscreen a little redundant.
Okay.
They've got volume controls on the steering wheel. So the driver doesn't need the knob. And the passenger doesn't really need to be worried about distracted driving. So who's the knob really for? It's almost like, in my upcoming video, I compare it to a stylus on a smartphone. Yeah, it might be useful every once in a while.
Right.
But overall, it just is not needed in most cases, in my personal opinion. And, I think some people who are transitioning from gas vehicle with lots of buttons to digital or electric vehicle, it might be some sort of familiarity that they're used to. But I'm now 5-6 years into my Tesla that has no buttons like that. I just found it unnecessary.
Right on. All right. Let's see. So yeah, overall for me, it was a pretty great experience, but I really like to get some more time behind it so I can just feel how it is overall, to live with too. like I said, Manhattan seemed to have like a little more range, but it's also warmer here. It was like 70 degrees at the time. Sorry, rest of the country. Spring is about to happen for the next few weeks before summer kicks in Florida.
Just go to another Ford dealership and get a different one.
That's true. I'd have to travel out of town. I should actually, you know. Hmm? I should, yes. Thomasville is not that far away in Georgia.
I have 10 Ford dealerships within 20 miles of me. So, like, I might just hit them all up.
Right. Because I was kind of hoping that, you know, they'd say, take it for the weekend, you know. But it's the only one they have, so they can't really do that. But I mean, yeah, I was kind of hopeful, but anyway, so let's move on to the news of the week. So I think the big story this week, I think we can all agree, is the debut of the Hyundai Ioniq 5. This is the first car for the new Hyundai Ioniq sub-brand and the first vehicle to be built on the EGMP platform. So let me share some numbers and a few points, and then we can go around and give our thoughts. So it's a crossover. I wanted to call it a low roof crossover. It looks maybe deceptively small in pictures, but it's almost 6 inches longer than like a Hyundai Tucson, and it's almost 2 inches less tall. It's shorter in length than a Model Y by a little bit, but it's longer than the VW ID4. As far as the dimensions, here's the kicker. The wheelbase is longer than that of the Hyundai Palisade, and that's their biggest SUV by like 4 inches. So the passenger compartment should be super roomy. The cargo space isn't huge, but okay, at 18.7 cubic feet or 529.5 liters. Fold the seats down, the rear seats down, and they fold pretty flat from what I can tell, so that's cool. But you can get 56 cubic feet altogether or 1,590.8 liters. That's a lower number somehow than the ID4 somehow. So like we were talking about volumes, cargo volumes and things earlier, I wonder if there's something going on with that. I don't know. But it's something to think about when we get a hold of one in real life to check out. Bjorn Nyland does his famous banana box test. I don't know if you have a standard, you know, these whatever standard sets of boxes and how many you can stick in there. So we'll be looking to see how many banana boxes this thing can hold. I think it's going to do pretty good. But anyway, on to the good stuff. In most territory markets, it will come with a choice of two batteries, a 58 kilowatt hour and a 72.6 kilowatt hour. The larger battery is said to be good for a range of 470 kilometers or 292 miles. And 480. Oh yeah. Oh, so they give a range of range. 292 to 298 miles under the WLTP cycle. That's in the all-wheel drive version. The rear-wheel drive version will likely go further. Okay. For some reason, North America will also get a slightly bigger battery, almost 5 more kilowatt hours at 77.4 kilowatt hours. And we don't have the EPA range figures for that yet, but I'm hoping they can peg that 300 number, you know? Because I know their past vehicles have been pretty efficient, like the Kona Electric, which aren't from the ground up electric. But we have a lot of owners in the Inside EVs forum, and they report, you know, 325, 350 miles sometimes of range of these things. And I think they're rated like 258 or something. Tom, do you know that number off the top of your head?
The Kona is... the Bolt's 259. Yeah, I think it's 258. I think it was one mile less.
Right on.
And as you noted, we do our range tests with the Hyundai. Hyundai makes incredibly efficient vehicles. They really do meet their EPA range and even exceed it. The Ioniq in particular is it's a beast for efficiency. So I hope that they manage to carry over to this vehicle. Now, it's a different shape. It's bigger. So it's not going to be as efficient as, say, the Ioniq. But Hyundai, right, like Tesla, has that special sauce for squeezing out the most efficiency out of their vehicles.
Right. And like you mentioned the Ioniq, so Hyundai has this sedan liftback kind of car they've been selling for years as a hybrid and as a plug-in hybrid. But this is like, they've taken that name and turned it into a sub-brand. And this is the first of those, the Ioniq 5. So charging speed is the other big deal here. It's a 0 to 80% in 18 minutes plugged into a 350 kilowatt DC fast charger. Or they also say 62 miles or 100 kilometers in 5 minutes, which sounds impressive. I imagine you have to have a pretty low battery to get that kind of speed, but no details on the onboard charger yet. So let's start with you, Sean. What is your overall impression?
This drawing or concept has me quite excited. Now, I use those words intentionally because it is yet to go into production. But this is actually quite exciting. I like the design of it. It's almost like a VW Golf meets like a Cybertruck. You know, it's got some sort of like sharp angles on it. Yeah. And it's a little bit reminiscent. I think Hyundai has put out some really fantastic cars, like consistently fantastic cars that perform pretty well. And this I would expect to be, you know, no different. I think it looks good. This is probably the best looking EV that I've seen from them. So that's really promising. They're not, in terms of style and design, I don't think that they've ever been too avant-garde or too forward-thinking with design, but you know, there's a proper market for this type of vehicle, and if it looks close to what these renders have, I think it's going to be really popular.
Right, we do have some like real car. Like I think these are computer renderings. I think we're seeing on the screen now, but there's some footage of the actual car in the metal kind of thing, and it's the production, we say, design. So it'll look like that pretty much. We have, I think on the Inside EV site too, we have some of the cars of the production version, like on the street without camouflage. So it looks not quite as, you know, perfect as these like computer renderings are. But Tom, you have some thoughts about this?
Yes, I do. But first, I'd like to address a couple comments. I see we had a couple comments in the section. First, JK Tesla asked if the hood on the Bolt EUV was more difficult to see over than the EV. Okay. And no, it's not. I'm only 5'8", and I couldn't even see the hood. So perhaps somebody who's taller might be able to see it a little, but it definitely doesn't obstruct your vision at all. And then there was one more here that I wanted to check out real quick. Oh yeah, Steve Myers asked, when you quoted the range, is that based on European standard or US standard? And Dom was quoting the WLTP range rating, which is the European standard, not the US standard. We find that on average, the EPA range rating is going to be about 10 to 15% less than the WLTP range rating. But that's remains to be seen, Steve. So my impressions on it, I absolutely love this vehicle. I kind of sound like Kyle now. Every time a new vehicle comes out, he's like, oh my God, I drove it. I want to buy it, or I totally hate it. But I really do like this vehicle. And I think I was just talking to my wife about it last night. There's a good chance that I'm going to get one. It ticks all the boxes for me. I love the vehicle to load. I want to be able to use that feature to make videos, to do all kind of fun things with that. I mean, it delivers 3.6 kilowatt. I mean, that's a lot of power that this thing can put out. I mean, it can power your house.
That's
if you don't have,
yeah, that's V2L function or vehicle to load, I believe. Yeah, you can plug it in. We're seeing it on the screen here now. Sorry,
I should have cleared that up.
That's all right.
Yeah, that's where the vehicle itself can power, you know, external electrical devices. I mean, even your house. So, you know, I think we all agree that this is where electric vehicles are going to go eventually. I think we're going to have a lot of interaction between your vehicle and your home and other devices. I think you're going to be able to use your car during power outages and so forth and so on. But to have this going to be available this year, I think is fantastic. I'm not thrilled with the dashboard. I don't really love that look. And I don't really need the fully reclining seats. One of the things I found interesting is how that they seem to spend a lot of time talking about, you know, the reclining seats, and you can, while you're charging, you can relax and recline. But then the next sentence is, oh yeah, it only takes 18 minutes to charge from 5 to 80%. I can't get that comfortable as this woman looks in 18 minutes. I don't know about you guys. It takes me longer to totally decompress and get comfortable. So, you know, 18 minutes is, you know, you get out, you unplug, you walk inside the convenience store, use the restroom, you buy a snack and you come out, and that's 18 minutes. You're driving away. You're not reclining and relaxing. I don't have anything against having the seats recline and relax like that. I just don't know that I would really use that feature, or even the center console that it slides forward and backwards. I guess, you know, there might be a need or a use for that at some point, but I've never sat in my car and said, geez, I wish this damn thing would move backwards. So, unless I guess I was trying to exit from the other side of the vehicle for some specific reason. But, I just don't know how it's kind of neat to have it, but I don't know how usable it's going to be. But I mean, for everything else, the wheelbase you mentioned earlier, Dom, is also another thing that's really amazing.
Right.
You know, the Model S, for instance, is a foot longer than this vehicle.
Okay.
And the wheelbase is 2 inches shorter.
Really?
Yeah. You know, the Model S is a big, long car.
So that's what, yeah.
And the wheelbase is 2 inches. And the Model S has kind of a long wheelbase. You know, so that's, to put it in perspective, Hyundai really pushed these wheels out to the edges of the vehicle as much as they could. I think it's going to have a good, I think that's going to improve the riding comfort. I think it's going to have the interior space is going to be fantastic. So I like everything they did with this vehicle.
I believe the back seats move back and forth as well. Like the front seats and the center console, they move back and forth. But I think there's some travel in the back seats as well. I'm not exactly sure how that all works. So someone mentioned about this being a great vehicle for camping because you can plug all that stuff in. And Hyundai has been, you know, playing that angle up a bit with some of their videos showing people like having like huge stereo systems outside on their camping trips or gourmet kitchen appliances, you know. I'm not sure if we have a shot of the outlet there again, Martin, if you could track that down. But I believe also there's like, so that V2L option, there's the plug under the back seat, but there's also in the, where you plug in the car on the outside, there's maybe a plug there as well. And I think maybe able to charge like another vehicle, you're going down the road and somebody's run out of charge, you know, you may be able to. I don't see anything there though. I don't know. I need to look into that. But I thought I had read that. Anybody else recall hearing that? No. Okay. Yeah. Someone mentioned, you can charge your electric bicycles when you're on your drive to the trail or on your way back or whatever. And then has a solar roof as well. That's worth mentioning. That's also on the Sonata, I believe it's like 200 watts. So it's not a huge amount of power, but it might give you, you know, I don't know. I think we just thought maybe like 8 miles. Some of the guys in the forum were talking it over and think, you know, if it was outside all day, you know, in a relatively sunny part of the country, which is great, you know, 3 miles or 3 miles, but whether or not it's enough to pay over time for the added cost of that option, it's, you know, we'll have to see how much that option is. So Martin, what are your thoughts on this? I know you're suffering from a sore throat this week, but so, you know,
it's not COVID.
Tax you too much.
It's not COVID. I've had a test. It's not COVID.
Right.
The most exciting thing for me is this is an EV designed from the ground up, flat floor. You know, how many times you have to exit into the path of traffic. If you need to, you can just scooch across. Very simple. And, you know, it's nice little touches like that, that are small things, first world problems, I know, but, the ability to charge from it, which is amazing. The ability to have a flat floor is brilliant. The ability to have this platform roll out across Kias and Genesis as well, and maybe even licensed to others. We keep talking about Apple, but they've put the kibosh on that conversation. So I'm really excited about this being a platform. And just to get a bit nerdy about how the automotive industry works, you know, conversations are had in 10 years time when in 15 years time. And if Hyundai Group wants to spin up a new EV, for instance, you're talking single years, as in 1 or 2 years, you could develop a new car and get it out. So whether that is another form factor or a different body type, for instance, this platform like VW have done is very versatile. So that's my most exciting thing, is that it's a pure EV from the ground up, but it opens, I know, you know, it's not an immediate thing to get excited about, but it opens up the future for development. And that is really exciting because it doesn't mean 1 or 2 new EVs. It means like 20, 30, 40 new EVs from one company.
Right. Somebody mentioned about, asked about availability. It's coming, I believe, this summer in Europe, in the UK. I'm not sure if I'll have the pricing here in a second. In North America, we should see it in December, I believe, if there's no delays, which, I have to think that it's going to be January at least. But maybe they'll make it. That'd be great.
And Dom, one of the questions was, will it be nationwide delivery?
Oh, yes.
Because if you remember, the Kona, when Hyundai released it, was just released in CARB states. But yes, this will be a nationwide delivery at launch.
Right on.
And it's interesting that we've got, you know, Sean and Tom on this podcast, because the one thing that I noticed is from Tesla owners saying, actually, this is quite impressive. Like, that's like, it charges quickly. And that's, you know, that's not always a common thing that you hear. Often an EV comes out and you hear Tesla fans go, oh, that's nice, but I still like my car, thanks. And I've heard Tesla fans this week saying, oh, that's nice. Like, yeah, I would consider that. There's obviously things like the supercharging network, which, you know, is the moat of all moats. And I just think they're secret sauce, but, and how everything is fully aligned in that company. So I don't think it's not a no brainer for many Tesla fans. I think there's so many, you know, they're in the ecosystem. They're going to be in the ecosystem forever because they love it and it works really well. But, it's interesting that it seems to have risen above the kind of Mustangs, the ID4s, with the Tesla community as well, which is, you know, neither here nor there, but it was interesting.
Sure.
I think that's what you want as well. You know, for people who are supportive of electric vehicles, you want multiples of viable options for EVs, not just one, because, you know, Tesla is fantastic, but they also have their disadvantages. They have their downsides. And I think the more automakers that put out compelling electric vehicles, the better it makes the entire industry, the better it makes Tesla. And to be quite frank, there are lots of great things about these other automakers that are strong suits that Tesla doesn't have yet or haven't figured out. So I think, you know, it's going to be the ships will rise with the tide. All ships will rise with the tide.
Hmm.
I agree. And I think part of that, Martin, is that this vehicle is moving the needle. You know, I talked about that earlier with the Bolt and the Bolt EV. It doesn't move the needle. It's a nice EV. I think it'll serve families well. It's going to be affordable. But this actually, like, especially with the vehicle to load features, this is and the super high speed charging. This is moving the needle. This is giving the other automakers something to reach for. Now the interesting thing is, I think Lucid did that also, but Tesla fans don't have the same reaction to what Lucid is doing compared to what Hyundai is doing. I think that's partly because Lucid is seen as more of a direct competitor. They're a startup. They're all EV. They're, you know, that it's too close to home for Tesla fans to give Lucid credit. But for Hyundai, that's fine. Oh, yeah, this is great. You know, a legacy OEM is finally doing something that's going to actually, you know, inspire the industry to start making better electric vehicles. I think that's part of it.
And I don't think we've got pricing for this yet for North America, right? But we do for the UK for sure, or some of the. Mm-hmm. So if you're in the UK, and I guess they've had some problems with their website crashing and different things, but they've also reached out afterwards and got in touch with people who are trying to reserve vehicles. And I believe they have a launch edition, which is, I believe it's fully loaded. I'm not sure, but I see £45,000. I don't know. How does that compare to something comparable over there, Martin?
It's not cheap, but it's in. Yeah, they gave the fully loaded price, which is an interesting tactic rather than the entry level price for the rear wheel drive small battery.
Right.
But it compares with ID4, Skoda Enyaq IV, fully loaded versions of that. So it would be and you're right. It was a frustrating moment because it was another example of a massive company with lots of resources and lots of really good people working in it just cocking up massively. And it makes you wonder how it keeps happening with these big car companies around EV launches. And I don't want to be too harsh, but equally I feel like I can be harsh because, you know, they're a big company with good people, like good marketing people, good website people. On the day they launched it, you click on buy now and it's an error 404 page. They hadn't turned it on for 24 hours. Now, my buddy who runs a Hyundai dealership and a really successful one as well, people were tweeting him saying, I want to buy it and I can't buy it. And how do I buy one? And he hadn't been told, and this is his business and this is his livelihood. And right. He pays Hyundai a lot of money every year to be one of their dealers. So he was replying on Twitter, I literally don't know. I believe Hyundai Europe are looking after it. Hyundai's official account replied to him, hey, thanks for your interest. Here's a link if you want to find your nearest dealer. And like, he didn't reply because he's too nice and a professional and obviously has a relationship with them. So I replied, he is a dealer. It's like, and it's like, obviously it's like the social media kid or the intern just trying to be helpful. It's not their fault, but in a way, so right. I was, you know, I hate criticizing, but
no, go ahead.
You know, they had, it wasn't sprung upon them. They knew right. that day was coming. They knew they had to turn not. So yeah, Hyundai.co.uk/Ioniq 5, whatever it was just a blank page. And you think, okay. So as far as I know, no one's been able to order one in this country because they sold out. It was the European bit of Hyundai that looked after it and allocation's gone this year. So then no one I know that people were trying to buy one and were told, oh, they've all gone now in the right. first hour or two. So yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
So super popular, but also super aggravating trying to get an actual hold of one. And I have to say on the PR side, also not super organized. Like they had a teaser video and then they had the sequel to the teaser video that came out. I don't know where I couldn't find it. They have some people found some B-roll footage or some really nice footage of the car. Looking like it's not on the media site. I have no
there's
idea.
Like where a whole movie. There's like,
there's a movie. There's a couple different
things, but yeah,
but you know, forget about trying to find them. You know, this one is now available on YouTube. I'm not even sure if it's on the Hyundai site or not, but on the Hyundai channel.
It's like a whole movie. Anyway, I'll stop.
Yeah, it's great. No, it's worth checking out if you can, because it's kind of you get to see the car actually moving around in action. It's not the most annoying, you know, fake drama or dramatization, whatever. It's kind of, okay, that's interesting.
I don't want to pile on because I love the car, but yeah, the launch was really botched. I don't want to really get into it, but we're talking about multiple events that were sent. We got calendar invites, then they were canceled, and then you got another calendar invite. And the whole thing, I was so confused about when we actually had, because we had a private press preview, and I had three invitations sent to me, and two of them were canceled. And I was trying to go through my emails to figure out, when is this thing? And then when the embargo ended changed, and then so we had the reveal, and then like the 2 days later, Hyundai's email system got messed up and started sending us all invites to the to the launch event, and just blasting all email blasts, and people are responding to it like, what the hell's going on here? Like, you did this 2 days ago. Why are you sending me this now? Is there another event? And you know, they were like, no, our email system's messed up. So like, oh, I love the car, but like Hyundai really had some issues around the launch of this thing.
A viewer asks, will there be a Kia version of the Ioniq? And there will be. That's going to be probably revealed before too long now. We don't even have the actual name for it yet. I think they've been calling it I keep getting mixed up. It's CV or maybe it's LV. I don't know. Maybe someone remembers. Sean, do you know? No. Okay. Anyway, yeah, look out for the Kia and also a Genesis version, which will be upscale. You know, a version of this as well, and a little more expensive, but somehow nicer. I think I was wondering if there's going to be a spicier version on the Hyundai. Like Hyundai has this like N sporty line, and I was thinking maybe it would get that, but I read somewhere else where Kia might get the sporty version as well. So that's something to look out for because I remember seeing a headline about it doing the Kia version doing 0-60 in 3 seconds, which is kind of crazy. This one does it in 5.2 seconds for at least the European big battery all-wheel drive version. It'll be interesting to see. But
which is more than fast enough. We focus too much on 0-60. Every car doesn't need to be a track car. You know, electric vehicles are fast. They're fun to drive. Like 5 seconds, 0-60. Just a few years ago, like that was only the top sports cars.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You talked about you wanted a Mustang 5.0, Sean, when you were a teenager. You were probably in the 80s when I wasn't. My best friend had one. And, what was the 0-60 on that back then? Like, we thought it was so fast. I think it was like 6.8 or something like that. Like, it's slow today. And that was like nothing beat a 5.0, you know? So, it's all relative. We need to stop focusing on 0-60.
Right. Especially for a family car, Right.
Yeah. Not everyone cares about 0-60. I mean, acceleration, the instant acceleration is really nice because sometimes you need that to get out of harm's way or to pass someone. But not everyone is looking for the fastest 0-60. There are other features that are more important than a vehicle.
You hit the nail right on the head, Sean. You need to be able to accelerate into traffic, onto the highway. There's an intersection where I live that's really hard. At a stoplight, a stop sign, I have to get out onto this very busy road. And I love how my Model 3, I don't need a big window. I can, as the cars are coming, I can be like, okay, I can do this one, punch it, and it just, boom, I'm out, in traffic. That's great. But you only need that short burst. It doesn't have to be a quarter mile track car.
All right, so let's move on to the next thing. I guess we're doing pretty good on time. So Hyundai was also in the news this week for not great reasons. It decided to recall 82,000 electric vehicles, due to battery fires. That's pretty much all the Kona electrics sold, or 76,680 of them. 15 have gone up in flames, mostly in South Korea, but also a couple in Canada and a couple in Europe. Also involved in the recall are 5,716 Hyundai Ioniq electrics. That's their sedan liftback vehicle that I mentioned a little while ago. They've been selling those for some time. And on top of that, they're also recalling 305 electric buses. I didn't even know they made electric buses, but there you go. And one of those experienced a fire earlier this month. I think we had a story on that on Inside EVs. We don't think this number includes the Hyundai electrics, the Kona electrics that were built in the Czech Republic, however. So these are just the ones from South Korea. It's going to cost them like a trillion won. That's the South Korean currency, which is about $900 million. $900 million. The replacement of the battery packs will start on March the 29th, 2021. We have a lot of owners in our forum, Inside EVs forum. So it'll be interesting to track how they do that whole thing. And actually, good for them if they got a lot of miles in their car, they're getting a fresh battery. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, I think this is a smart move to be proactive about this. Safety should always be first. Yes, it's expensive. Yes, unfortunately, some cars have caught fire, which I didn't realize. But safety of the consumer is of the utmost importance. So, the silver lining in this, as you've mentioned, Dominic, is that they're going to get brand new battery packs, which is great.
Right. Yeah, and the thing with cars, electric vehicles, catching fire. This is, I think, maybe happening if it's happening when they're charging. It's in your house. It's like there's a good chance it's in your garage. It's not out on the curb. Where they're not going to hurt anything. It's like it's at night. So if you do have an electric or any vehicle, really, you should have. And you park your car in your garage, make sure you have a smoke detector in your garage. I'll just say that because gas vehicles go up more, just as often and more often, it's a thing. Even brand new vehicles of whatever kind, we've seen, pickup trucks burning like on test drives before. So it's a thing that happens occasionally.
Well, the thing about that makes, in my opinion, makes it a little bit worse is you're not just relying on the vehicle to be safe and not have a fire. When you're talking about charging an electric car, now you're introducing another way that the fire can happen.
Right.
If your outlet isn't wired correctly, if you're using an extension cord that's not proper, if your EVSE isn't so it's not just the vehicle. There are other things that can happen, which is why you need to be absolutely safe. And I always recommend don't do your own home wiring for electric vehicle service equipment. I know maybe it doesn't seem hard. You want to save a couple hundred bucks. Your car is going to be charging all night while you sleep, It's not worth it. Have an electrician do it for you, you know, 100%. But one of the things I want to circle back to was that one of the points that Sean made was that it was great that that they're going to be replacing all these battery packs. And my point about that is it's great for the owner of the vehicle. That's it. It's not great for Hyundai, and it's not great for the industry, right? Because we're already battery constrained across the world. And this is 82,000 battery packs that could be going in new vehicles.
Yes.
And if we are indeed, you know, capacity constrained by batteries, this is virtually 82,000 less electric vehicles that are going to be on the road in the next year or two, or right, potentially. So, you know, it's actually very bad, in my opinion, for the industry that this large of a block of battery packs are just going to get used and put in cars that have already been on the road.
So it's not, that's a great point, Tom. It's not clear at this point what's responsible for this problem. LG, there's a lot of finger pointing. LG said in a statement that Hyundai misapplied LG's suggestions for fast charging logic in the battery management system, adding that the battery cell should not be seen as a direct cause of the fire, which is kind of interesting because this is LG also makes the battery that goes in the Chevy Bolt EV, and that has had a recall for 68,677 of those vehicles. And those cells, we understand, are slightly different, a different separator, I believe GM is saying. And GM has just actually said that they figured out the issue and they can prevent any further fires with a software up there. There's been a two or three or something Chevy Bolt fires, but out of like, you know, tens of thousands sold. So it's not terrible, but any potential fire is not great. Because, you know, we want EVs to be better than what's come before, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll address the question there. None of those packs are going to landfill, by the way. Batteries are still too valuable. Oh, yeah. Even their component parts to be recycled are too valuable. But in their form that they are in, they can be used for stationary storage. If it means that a different use of the BMS in terms of only going to 70, 80, 90% state of charge to make sure they're safe. But even if there is something fundamentally wrong with these cells, and I don't think there is, they can still be recycled. But no batteries go to landfill. And actually, you know, Tesla have been putting batteries in new cars quietly. I don't make a song and dance about it, but you know, the amount of used S's, old S's that you see on the market, and it'll just say in the description, oh, I had its new battery pack at 100,000 miles or whatever. They've been doing this for a long time, and none of those packs have gone to landfill. Tesla don't take them back, but they'll go on to companies that will either break them down at module level or sell them on to enthusiasts or people that are doing, you know, mods and conversions and classic cars. So, you know, don't worry about that. There's not a battery going to landfill anywhere. They're just too valuable.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering what they're going to do with these. If they're going to make it do it like, I kind of like would like to see like a stationary storage, you know, things set up. You know, maybe Hyundai could do some experiments with that. Or maybe, I don't know if the risk is too much. Yeah. So it might, they just might end up all being recycled, I guess. I don't, Sean, did you have any insight on that? No. Okay. Let's move on from that. Let's skip that. Hyundai is also buying some batteries for other future EVs from they're going to do some from LG for LG too, like the IONIQ 7, I believe, will have LG, but that's way in the future. But they're also buying from SK Innovation and the Chinese company CATL, C-A-T-L, for some of the EGMP vehicles coming after 2023. So let's talk about an American automaker, an American EV automaker. Lucid has made official what many had expected. It will merge with Churchill Capital Corporation for a special purpose acquisition company, or SPAC. It will be the largest EV SPAC deal that we've seen. This is another way for a company to go public instead of doing like the initial public offering with banks and everything. They just merge with an existing company that's already on the stock exchange. It will be the largest SPAC deal we've seen, and it will provide Lucid with $4.4 billion in cash for further expansion. And I'm not exactly sure what this means in financial speak, but the pro forma equity value of the combined company will be $24 billion. if you looked at the stock of this, like EV stocks have been really hot, and all there's been a bunch of these SPAC kind of deals, and they've been super hot. But just like in this last week, a lot of them have kind of crashed. Like I think the Churchill Capital stock had gone up like to $59 at some point, and it's down like 27, I think, yesterday. This is not financial advice, because I am not a financial advisor. But I do think that the value of the company will regain some of that. I'm not sure. I don't know where. I have no idea how far up it's going to bounce back to. But I do expect that. Anyone want to say anything about that?
The company seems very hopeful. I think they're going to do well. My only concern is the price point. How many of these vehicles will they be able to sell? North of $100,000. It seems like a good car. It looks good. It seems like their core technology has been well thought out and well developed. So I personally have a lot of hope and promise for the company. I did hold a position when I started hearing about the rumors but I've since sold it and did well on it.
Awesome. Good.
I'm optimistic. I think I would not be surprised if we see Rivian go public, and if for an even larger amount. Right. But the fact that they're doing this, I think, is going to give them some extra cash to be able to continue production and the launch of their vehicle. And I think it's a good thing.
Yep. Rivian announced they will be doing an IPO, and I believe that's coming later this year. So, and that's usually IPOs, there's a lot more money involved. So this might be a big SPAC deal, but the Rivian deal, I think, is going to be like on another level, because like you say, this is, we're looking kind of smallish numbers here, right? For, luxury sedan, you're not going to sell a million of those, but the Rivian's got, huge deals, even with Ford and with Amazon and its own vehicles. And so along with this good news, though, there is some bad for Lucid Air reservees. Instead of spring 2021, you can expect they're calling their cars post-luxury. I don't know why. But instead of this spring, they're only going to be coming out late summer or autumn, possibly. So that's kind of a bummer. We've got like a customer asking about that this week on the Inside EVs forum. He's waiting for his car, and he's chomping at the bit. And now it's kind of very disappointing. But we're also in a global pandemic, and so things happen, as they say. Moving right along, we also learned some things about Lucid's future product plans. Besides the Lucid Gravity SUV, which is like a full size SUV, we've seen pictures of. You can search for Lucid Gravity on the Inside EV site, and you'll see pictures of that from spy shots from months ago. But they also intend to make a Tesla Model 3 rival and a pickup truck, which strikes me as kind of weird. And I think there's a smaller SUV in there as well. They want to have six products by 2030. The Air, the SUV Gravity, a premium sedan, a premium SUV, a premium coupe, which kind of sounds interesting, and the pickup truck. I think they have some large expectations for volume of the pickup truck too. I forget exactly what they were, but I don't know. Is Lucid a pickup truck brand, Dom?
Dom, everybody can be a pickup truck brand in the U.S. we buy 3 million pickup trucks per year in this country. In the top three selling vehicles in the U.S. are pickup trucks. The F-150 is number one, the Chevy Silverado is number two, and the Dodge Ram is number three. And in the top 10, five of the vehicles are pickup trucks. So why would, if you have a platform that Lucid has that they're going to make the SUV on, why wouldn't you? If you can use that platform, and the market share on pickup trucks keeps increasing. In 2020, it was more than 20%. One in every five new vehicle sold in the U.S. was a pickup truck. Why wouldn't you want a piece of that if you're an automaker?
I don't know. Peak pickup truck, man.
They sell. You got to make what people are buying. That's why we don't import. We don't sell small hatchbacks here anymore. I like a small hatchback. Dom, you like small hatchbacks, but
I do.
They don't sell them here anymore because it's, I don't know, nobody else does. They just don't sell well in the U.S. They're gonna give us what we ask for. And right now, this country is asking for pickup trucks.
Right.
So automakers, you're crazy if you don't sell them.
Automakers make a lot more money on pickup trucks than they do small hatchbacks.
Yeah.
As well. They really get a lot of volume on hatchbacks to make any money. So
Tom's got his Cybertruck reservation. In Sean, have you got yours?
Oh, two Cybertruck owners.
I was resistant initially. I was at the event and a little bit slack-jawed by the look of it, even though Elon said it was crazy looking.
Right.
And it took me about, let's see, the event was in November, I think, of 2019. It took me until September of the following year, right after I got coal rolled by a diesel pickup truck. I mean, bad. It was intentional too. And so I had it. Like I was just done with being the small guy on the road. So that was what pushed me over the edge.
Reminds me of that comic when we were kids, or when I was a kid. I'm probably older than most of you guys. There's a little comic of the guy kicking sand in his face. And so it was like an ad for a workout program or something. Anyway, Mueller's. Whatever. Anyway,
but Sean, I have to comment really quickly. Sean, I was in the same situation as you, and I call it like the five stages of Cybertruck adoption. You know, your initial thought was like, ha ha ha, like yeah, nice joke, and then you're like, stage two is like, oh my god, they're serious. This is actually what they're going to try to sell. Stage three is, I hate it. How could they possibly do this to us? Stage four is, it's not that bad. And then stage five is, I got to have one. And you're on the site putting your deposit down. So like so many people that I've talked to have gone through those five stages. So I think you've reinforced that.
And Elon was just saying this week that they have the final design of the truck. I mean, it should look pretty much like what we see here on the screen. It should be pretty much what they showed. But I mean, there will be some small changes, but yeah. So, but it still will be interesting to see, because there was talk about it being bigger or smaller and it going back and forth. So it'll be interesting to see what they finally decided on. Speaking of pickup trucks, real quick, there's Lordstown Motors, which is they're in Lordstown, Ohio, and they bought the GM factory, that I believe. They have a pickup truck coming out. It's got the in-wheel motors in it, and they are entering a version of that into the San Felipe 250 electric race. They have a racetrack. There's a race there. It's a 290-mile single loop race scheduled for April 17th, 2021. And they have a track. They're going to enter it. And man, it's kind of a risky move, but you know, it should be interesting to see how that all goes. I think at the top of this, we're looking at the YouTube, at the post. If you go right to the very top, there might be a click on that. Should be a picture of it coming up. It looks pretty much like their production truck, but you can tell it's not their production truck. So it looks kind of, I don't know, actually, I think I like this more than their production truck. But it'll be interesting to see, because they haven't produced anything. And their very first vehicle, their like demo vehicle, burned to the ground recently. So, you know, if things go wrong, it's not going to be great, but if things go good, it's a risky move. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there. Speaking of things going wrong, Tesla's Fremont factory was partially shut down this week, but it's reopened again. It's been very, very quiet, but Sawyer Mayer, I believe his name is, a fan and a good source of information about Tesla on Twitter, had mentioned that some people on the inside, he received words that at least some of the factory had been shut down, and that got verified that actually, yes. But by the time everyone figured out, yes, it was shut down. Elon Musk said it's back up again. So it was shut down for 2 days because of part shortages. I did see on Bloomberg, I think they mentioned that workers might not get paid for a few days, or they were encouraged to take vacation days if they had any, which I think personally sucks. This is not really electric vehicle related, but you know, it's not a unionized shop, so the workers are kind of, you know, at the mercy of, you know, management, basically, which is a shame, because I don't know, I have, you know, you have your vacation days for, and then I don't know, you have your plans for vacation later this summer, and then all of a sudden the factory's putting you out of work for a few days and you have to make ends meet. So I don't know. Anyway, that's rubs me a bit the wrong way, but that's
whatever. You want to come and work over here. And if I say over here, I mean in Europe. And when I say Europe, I mean France. Because then you'll be fine. You'll be absolutely fine.
So, very strong labor laws.
I always get really surprised when I see stuff, you know, that you talk about US things, because, you know, very the Tesla will have it different in Berlin. That's for sure. There'll be you can go home now today, because the German unions are very, very strong.
They have unions over there. It's a whole different discussion. Oh, yeah. I'm not
that's
really.
That's a whole different podcast I can tell you about.
Right.
Employment law over here in Europe. Yeah.
I'm not really a big union person, which is odd, because my dad's side of the family were coal miners, and huge union is, you know, a big deal. I just think we should have a good laws that, so they're not necessary, you know, basically, because I just hate the idea of, you know, I already pay taxes, I have to pay union dues as well, as, you know, but anyway, so moving on, Oshkosh, that's a defense company, will electrify part of the U.S. Postal Service fleet. They won the award, they won the contract for the U.S. Post Office trucks, but only 10% of them, I think, are going to be electric. And it looks, if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see what it looks like on the screen. I don't know if we all have some words to describe that exactly.
There's not enough time to get into this. We need a show on this. It looks on the surface like a terrible deal. Hopefully it can be stopped, in my opinion. I think DeJoy, who's the Postmaster General, you know, it seems like a good old boys backroom deal, a defense contractor, you know, that makes tactical, you know, vehicles for war, you know, got this contract, and, you know, very small percentage of the fleet is going to be electric vehicles. And let's face it, what vehicle is better, other than maybe a airport shuttle bus or something, for electrification than a mail truck that has a short route, that does a repeatable route every day? They don't go very far, you know, and it's mind boggling. And the funny thing is, my initial reaction, and like 20 other people that I know on Twitter, their initial reaction was like, wait a minute, DeJoy is still Postmaster General after January 20th? Like, how did that happen? But it did. And yes, he is. And, let's just hope that this isn't the final say on this. This can be reevaluated and perhaps reversed. So
I think there's some pushback. He was in hearings or something this week, and he told lawmakers that, you know, to get used to him, he's going to be there for a while. But I think they're working. He's not appointed by the administration, but I think they're working on ways to remove him. He's not, you know, politically popular with the new administration. Tesla has cut the price of the Model 3 and Model Y long-range versions. Last week, we were talking about the short-range, right, getting $1,000 cuts. This week, we have cuts to the Model 3 long-range all-wheel drive and the Model Y long-range all-wheel drive. Long-range, Sean, did you see this? It's like $1,000.
Yeah, I know a lot of people make a big fuss about Tesla dropping their prices multiple times in a year.
Right.
I always found that criticism very odd. What we don't know is what are Tesla's efficiencies with production? And I would guess that as they get more cost efficient with producing vehicles, that they're passing that savings along to the buyer, which puts electric vehicles into the hands of more people. So this is what you want to do. This is what Henry Ford did with his vehicles in the early days. He dropped the price so it would be more affordable. To me, this is just a part of getting more electric vehicles on the road.
Right. Yeah, there's been some back and forth about why. But, you know, Elon Musk, CEO of Tesla, is very adamant that they're not lowering prices because there's a drop in demand. They are, he says, very battery constrained. They can't they can't produce enough batteries, you know, to supply all the vehicles they need to produce. But you still have, you know, short sellers. I think Gordon Johnson was mentioned by Bloomberg in their piece as saying, you know, demand is, I don't know if they use the word falling off a cliff, but, you know, he thinks demand is very soft.
Well,
I mean, I think that's
time will tell, right? We look at the quarterly numbers here very soon. Now, let's not forget, and everyone seems to do this, especially short sellers around Q1, it's traditionally soft for the whole entire automotive industry. So, you know, are they going to, you know, let's take a snapshot in 12 months and find out where Tesla did. The demand problems have yet to materialize for Tesla. Each year they continue to sell more, and you know whether they hit their goal this year. I think it's optimistic. I'm optimistic about it personally, but you know, demand being soft for Q1 happens every single year for the automotive industry. So short sellers will be able to sort of credit themselves with this. But let's take a look at 12 months. How many vehicles they produce? Is it more? Is it less? Then we have a discussion.
Right, exactly. What was that comment that was just up? How is Tesla changing prices any different from GM changing incentives month to month? That's a very good point. GM has thrown like a lot of money on the hood of a Bolt. If you wanted a good deal on a brand new electric vehicle and you're not too fussy about interiors, the Bolt EV can be had for under $25,000, $24,000, my local dealer. But before you get in there and start doing, you know, any horse trading or whatever, $24,000 for a 250 some mile electric vehicle is a great deal. But you know that, but that's a lot of that is behind the scenes, and so that's, you know, if there, I won't say it's a demand issue, but it's probably a demand issue in the Bolt's case. It's because they were asking too much money. You get into, you know, 30 some thousand, $7,000 or $8,000 for the Bolt, the first gen Bolt EV. You get in it and you think, I got in, this is not a $37,000 whatever dollar car. This is, you know, this is a value vehicle. And now it's, but for $24,000 all day long, I would buy one. That would be my next car. And it might be, actually, because I'm a value customer. I mean, that's what I look for.
Well, Tom, wait till the 2022s start showing up in dealerships. If there's any 2021s left over,
right.
You think the discounts are big now, you know, they will want them off the lot. So it might be worthwhile hanging on to checking out those prices in the, you know, somewhere in the summer on Bolt inventory. You right. might be able to pick one up for like $20,000.
It's like a little balance, because I also have to look at the used value of my Spark EV. If I wait too long, it's going to drop more in value. So I need to get maximum money out of that. And I can still get, I think I can sell my Spark EV for almost what I paid for it like a year and a half ago at this point. And it's because it only's got 20 some thousand miles on it, like low 20s. So, but anyway, that's just my situation. So I don't know if we wanted to say anything more about that price cut, but there is something about availability. Oh yes. The last, I think we said the Tesla Model Y standard range was canceled, but that's not exactly the case. It's still available, but it's off menu. So I guess Elon doesn't like the fact that it doesn't have the range that he would like to see on a Tesla vehicle on their site. So it's not on their site. But if you want one, it's available. You just have to call up a store and ask them about getting yourself one.
Now, Dom, are we sure that you can order one, or are they selling like in, you know, existing inventory?
Don't know. Well, this is one that they haven't sold. I have to look into it. I can't answer it right off the top of my head.
Accurately. Yeah, because that would be important to know. Like they might be off menu because they're just selling out, you know, the couple thousand that they still have sitting in the parking lot. You might not be able to order one to spec. But I'm just speculating here. I'm just curious.
Right. Maybe Sean might have some insight on that. Nope. Okay. So let's hit a couple things real quick on the way out. So EV availability. So the Tesla Model Y standard range is still available. The Volkswagen ID.4 U.S. deliveries are set now to begin in March. I called up my dealer after driving the Mustang Mach-E. I thought, I want to try out the VW ID.4 now. And I called up my dealer, and they don't have They know it's coming sometime, like this month or very soon. But they couldn't. They don't have one yet. Tom, you have one in your driveway at this very moment, and we look forward to hearing about that next week. I guess you're going to be driving it in the rain.
I'm going to be driving it in about 20 minutes. Awesome. So, yeah. No, I'm going to have it for the next 3 days. And unfortunately, it's supposed to rain here the next 2 days really badly. So today's my day. With good weather, it's nice and sunny. As soon as the podcast's over, I'm going to be out there doing a 70-mile-an-hour range test, do some DC charging videos, and getting as much recorded as I can today before the bad weather comes in.
JK Tesla says my ID4 is in the ocean now. Hopefully he means on the ocean, but we'll see. That's the ID4 should be a good value. It's I believe it's a little bit cheaper than the Tesla Model Y, which is a good competitor for it, and possibly the Mach-E as well. I think it's cheaper than the Mach-E, but so and a decent range. So I look forward to hearing all about it next week, Tom. Other EVs coming available. Rivian has reconfirmed that R1T, its pickup truck, deliveries will begin in June, as they said. So no new delays there. So that's great news. And finally, from across the ocean there on your side of things, we have some video here of the Rivian R1T in the snow. Oh, yeah. I love this thing. You love this too, Sean, right?
Yes, it's exciting. It's a very compelling vehicle. I don't particularly like the design of the truck as much as the SUV. I really like the SUV a lot.
Right.
But they've been working really hard on this. I know some of the team members there, and this is just a well thought out vehicle. Their vehicles are not afterthoughts. They're not compliance vehicles. These will be very compelling cars, and they will compete head-on with what Tesla offers.
I think their competitor is more like Range Rover, Jeep. They look really off-road capable. Like some of the footage that we've seen them scrambling up Rocky Hill, it's just really compelling. Yeah, in deep sand, snow, whatever, water up to it. Yeah, it's just, man, I can't wait to get into one of these things. All right, well, that brings us to the end of our show. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section, or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. And don't forget you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom Longley is at Tomlog. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Sean, what is your Twitter handle?
Sean M. Mitchell.
All right. You can search Sean Mitchell on Twitter. He'll pop up there as well. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.
Thanks, guys.